Perry now at the doctor's side once more, but just kind of looking a little bewildered and lost to why she's there at all.
Well, like the rest of us. We are now entering the final installment of The Mysterious Planet, part four, and part four of the season 23 trial of a Time Lord. We are commencing after three. Three, two, one.
God, I mean, if you guys are still listening to this, I don't know whether I have no respect for you or a lot of respect for you.
A lot of respect for you. And of course, if you're watching this on Patreon or listening to this on the Patreon, you have got the opportunity. We've bonused this to you first. It's not because we don't like you. We thought this was a very interesting thing to have a look at in depth, because it is something that is, as we've already said, this entire series has been hugely overlooked by Doctor Who fans and fans of watching Doctor Who.
Yeah, and existence, the totality of existence has said, and that's a good thing. Why disrupt what is a natural order, which is to forget the forgettable? The train is noisy. We hunt by foot. Oh. You can make that a headline.
Okay.
Forget the forgettable, the mysterious planet.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about train is noisy, we hunt on foot.
Why, Grell? Are you betrayed? No one knows why, because no one's really followed this, because...
We should be free. He's dead, Jim.
It's a real weird... I mean, there's bits of the set which are weird as well. That railing against the cylindrical wall, where it just stops...
With the notion of it being an underground station, there's no elevators for start off. There's nothing that looks like a platform. There's no toilets. But you never see toilets on television anyway, really. Anyway, so certainly not in the 1980s. So that's not a huge thing. There's no space for vending. There's no ticket space, really. We've got the escalators, but you know, there's no way for anyone to jump over. There's no kiosks. Little rooms that might be kiosks, and as you said, when we discussed in the previous episode, there's no habitation areas.
Yeah.
No, there's no sense of anyone living there apart from these two clowns.
Maybe. Yeah.
No, keep doing it, mate. It moved.
No, apparently it didn't. It didn't move at all. Just reporting back to Joan Sims. Didn't move. You're right, Joan. You kind of like, you want to be somewhere else. Anywhere else. In fairness, she's actually got one of the best costumes in the show. Well, maybe my time is almost over. And she can go home. Let us sign your useless toys. I asked, why have you entered here? We are the tribe of the free. You are vassals. Outside the law, outside the plan. You have brought disorder where order reigned. I mean, the sad thing is, why?
It's quite a good effect, that, actually.
Yeah, it's not a bad effect. That's quite gnarly as well for the show. Let's not focus too much on issues. That's it. Pull us back up. Good call. I feel like there's like a premise that is playing under here, which could somehow be realized better. But it's funny, you know, when we were talking about the Dalek Master Plan, and how there's a sort of sense of you're almost like at the back end of an era which is starting to struggle to find out really where it can go. Here we are again, aren't we?
Yes.
In a similar space where they're doing a similar thing too, and it's struggling. Now, I would I just said, as well, I don't know. I mean, both of them, in a weird way. Well, no, this doesn't. This does pull its punches, unfortunately. I was going to say, Dalek Master Plan, as we've said before, does have. It does. It does take a few swings, doesn't it? I mean, as we say, Katarina gets killed off early on. Sarah Kingdom, who looks like going to be a new camp companion, gets killed off. Yep. There's quite a lot of dark moments. There's quite a lot of variety in some. You know, it's not just Kemble. We go to other places.
And it also has a cheeky Cockney monk as well.
Yes, we have the cheeky Cockney monk. We have Feast of Stephen. You know, fourth wall breaking, and the stuff in there. Trial of the Time Lord does feel like an 80s version to try and tackle the same problem. And it just... And I think what frustrates me a bit is that, you know, Colin's got these great bits in the act, embedded in the story where he can actually be a kinder, more engaging and more charismatic doctor. At these moments where he's doing his other side, which he does do really well, you want to see him doing that within the story to people who deserve it.
Yeah.
Rather than these two characters who just feel like barriers to the story. You know they're not going to go anywhere. You know they're going to be there for the next, you know, 10 episodes, 9 episodes. It just feels misplaced energy. I'd like to have seen him have this sort of anger at people within the story. I'd like to have seen him have this sort of performance where it matters. And he's a really powerful performer as well. It's, you know, let Colin Baker off on people who deserve it. It's quite a nice cathartic experience, but you just rarely see them direct him into the right space for that energy. What has poor Perry done in this episode? I mean, yes, it's nice she's not been chained up to become married to someone or, you know. But still.
Very little.
It's an interesting, just thinking about companions. And especially female companions, which... in television made predominantly for boys and men, they struggle as an archetype, I guess. But the best ones seem to be ones where there's something very deep rooted in them which keeps them consistent and stops them from just becoming a puzzle piece to tell a story.
Yeah.
Of a format that they can't get away from. There has to be a companion there. You know, and making sure that doesn't disappear invariably, it always does. In all the good versions, even the good versions, Sarah Jane Smith, you know, we lose the journalist side to her. But we are left with Elizabeth Sladen doing a very good performance. Romana, too. Romana 1 to a degree, especially Romana 2 manages to carry her own throughout her peerage. And that makes her a very strong one. You know, she's not allowed to just become a cipher. Or someone for people to run around with totally. She has a certain amount of agency. I think Zoe does fairly well with Wendy Padbury because, again, they manage to keep her genius about her constant. But Perry, the biologist, apart from a scene in Time Lash, there's nothing to really guide her. There's a scene, I think it's either Time Lash or Attack of the Cybermen, where he threatens to take her home. And she says, oh, I don't want to go home. But you're left thinking, but why do you want to be there?
Why do you want to stay? Yeah.
Because you don't get anything out of this. You just go into dangerous places with a man who's kind of rude to you the whole time.
Yeah.
You feel almost feels an abusive space. So Perry really struggles because she's got no agency in why she's there. And her background doesn't float her either.
Ironically, for someone who you first meet diving.
Well, but that's the problem. She is constantly written for purely for her aesthetic. And I think that's a shame for Nicola as an actor. But I think it's a shame potentially for the character, which I think they could have done so much more with. Present yourself at my portals. Alone.
You sacked.
It's funny, I'm just thinking back to Patrick Troughton. If you ignore Ben and Polly as leftovers, you know, Zoe, Jamie, Victoria, all characters which aren't contemporary and sit from different time zones.
They're quite interesting characters, and it's something the Doctor Who's very, very much shied away from since.
Yeah, well, this is it exactly, and I was just mulling it over, that all of them don't become overly contemporised. They sort of sit within their field. You know, Jamie is always sort of slightly... He's not dumb, but he's not informed.
Yeah.
And they play that throughout. Zoe is always slightly arrogant and thinking of it from a sort of mathematical perspective. She doesn't talk about being a future person, but the maths and the, computer skills.
A problem with having writers of Doctor Who, showrunners of Doctor Who, who was very much part of Doctor Who in terms of having spent a lot of time with Doctor Who.
Yeah.
That they want to avoid that because they see them as they're over familiar with those characters and think that that's something that's being done, whereas in reality it was done like 5 decades ago and hasn't been done since, apart from Nyssa and Adric. They're really the only later attempts to do that, I think.
On a sidebar, because this is boring, I was listening to John Peel's Dalek Master Plan, the audio, after. I thought I'd listen to the audio. And in that, Peel suggests that Katarina would not have seen a key because all their doors were barred from the inside. So to have something which would allow people access, control the outside of a door, I think is what he says anyway. And I always just went back to that whole thing about you say, no, they did have keys.
Mm.
And I was thinking, have you missed a step, John, there? Is that true? I genuinely don't know.
We have an interview with John Peel coming up in a few weeks' time that Brian conducted. So that'll be going out on the Castorbis archive. I think it was from about 2013. That's part of our Eighth Doctor collection of interviews.
Okay.
So that'll be interesting to check out in more depth. Yeah.
It's a pity that we are now, 13 years late, actually asking Brian if he could ask John about the key and the door.
So anyway, back to the Trial of a Time Lord, because we do have 12 minutes left of the mysterious planet. This conversation feels very unoriginal. Fifth Doctor talking to Cybermen in Earth's shock.
But I think the problem here is that Drathro's stuff hasn't really made a difference to any of the other episodes. It's been the Doctor running away from, you know, the issues with the schisms within the society which Drathro is involved in. But Drathro doesn't have that much impact in it.
No.
And the rest of the stuff with the tribe on the surface, Drathro has no impact in it. So suddenly we're now getting to, you know, what Drathro's about. And it's just a bit late. You've controlled your pointless little empire for too long. Now you can't see anything beyond it. We'll have to blast through them, Dibber. Don't like it, Mr. Glitz. 5 rounds rapid should do the trick. And what if the L3's still functioning? I'm not commenting. What if he's got an emergency backup support system? There are a lot of what ifs there, lad. Yeah, but the most important of all is, what if I'm right? I don't know. Arthur Daly.
Are you sure this leads into the castle?
It must do.
There's nowhere else it could go.
Talk about the tradesman's entrance.
Well. It's a weird space because, again, I don't mind the design in itself. I think in terms of, this shot here, the composition with Glitz and Dibber there, you know, the curves and everything in the background scenery is kind of cool. It looks, as long as you don't look too close at it, it looks kind of cool. It just feels misplaced.
And then you got the lighting issue as well, which is not so bad in the quote-unquote castle. But everywhere else, it's too bright.
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I like the lines in these spaces. I mean, like where they framed Colin there, it's really nice.
Yeah.
I like that. And you've got the light behind, just giving it a bit of a pop. Then you've got this bit of awkward framing, which I imagine this outfit is hard to actually find a spot where it doesn't look wrong. But there's some nice design work through this. I'm going to try and end this by going try and find the positives rather than constantly kicking it. And certainly in the design. This is all right. It's doing its job, I guess.
I think there's a similar scene in one of the later parts of this. I don't know.
Of Trial of the Time Lord.
Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've just got them mixed up in my head.
I mean, they are terrible red lasers. Mm. Less to do with the effect.
They look like they've been borrowed from aliens. You know, the designers seen aliens and thought, those are decent guns, we're borrowing that idea.
And then by dragon fire, they're like, yeah, we've seen aliens. We're going to use those guns and totally homage the hell out of that. This mobile chunk heap here that none of this need happen if only he'd let me shut the system down. That seems eminently sensible. Oh, you won't listen to reason. He needs black light to function, so he sees no reason why the rest of us should survive. Yeah. Oh, well. Perry now at the doctor's side once more, but just kind of looking a little bewildered and lost to why she's there at all.
Well, like the rest of us. Because yes. The whole... I mean, the other thing, this is all based along a theoretical existence of something called black light, which most people have never heard of. The idea of black light, by definition, is silly. Whether it does turn out to exist or not, I think I'm not sure if it's related to dark matter. Perhaps one of our more intelligent and informed listeners and viewers can let us know about that. But it hinges on that, and it's it's a thing that, because it doesn't really exist and it doesn't have any kind of tangible existence or relative. There's nothing in the real world that you can relate to black light, so it's all meaningless. He might as well be powered by magic.
Yeah. Yeah. I think... I think when you sort of introduce concepts like that, there's got to be something thematically meaningful about it.
Yeah. So like when Bidmead did things with computing, it worked and it had an actual purpose to the plot.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but black light could just be scintillon beams or whatever they wanted to call it. It's just
tachyon pulses.
Exactly. Again, the doctor with some very loose tie. No one seems to dare to tighten anything around Colin Baker. As if they're like, no, don't do that. Theirs looks fairly tight compared to his. We'll have to run an explosion. All I can do now is hope to contain it. Gary, press that row of buttons in front of you. And then we MacGuffin the way out of here. I mean, I was thinking while we were watching this, thinking back to the Rebos operation. And, you know, having your two crooks in there and how that somehow is charming. And while I quite like Glitz, Glitz and Dipper don't really do much.
No.
For me. But the Rebos operation is, again, it's a simplicity, isn't it? It's, you know, two crooks trying to pull off a swindle that goes wrong, and then they have to run away. You know, it's largely what Rebos operation's about, but that makes it quite simple. It's that whole thing, if you can explain a premise quite quickly, you've got a premise there. If you I still find it very hard in a sentence to say what a mysterious planet's about.
Yes,
other than it's a mysterious, there's lots of small different things going on here.
different societies conflicting and trying to make sense of their role in a space which is, some of which is controlled by Drathro, a fairly forgettable robot thing.
Yeah. There's, just looking at the reception section on Wikipedia, which has a couple of quotes. Patrick Mulcairn of Radio Times stated, "A dismal last gasp from ailing writer Robert Holm. The travails of the Saxon-like tribe of the free and way-faced tunnel dwellers are totally unengaging. Lifeless characters, clumsy robots, flimsy cliffhangers, zero peril." AV Club's Christopher Barnes said, "Mysterious Planet never really takes off, laden down by the script. A lot of time wasted running around in the forest or down corridors, and some atrocious acting by some of the minor characters, particularly Joan Sims as Cretisa, the Boadicea or Boudica-esque warrior queen who sounds like she's escaped from a community theatre Shakespeare in the Park production." It's very hard to argue with any of those observations.
I mean, I'd say to a degree, Sims' overperformance just gives it a little bit of life.
Yes.
But you don't really feel anything for the character. I don't disagree with that. I wouldn't say it's bad. There's just not much there to really deal with. But it happens a lot. I mean, like Time Lash again, you know, Paul Darrow's character largely hinges on Paul Darrow's overplaying performance to make what otherwise is a character with nothing special there to really play with. You know, he's got nothing, so he gives it everything.
My wife allegedly has been murdered. That's not from Time Lash, that's just a Paul Darrow thing.
He sent it up because he felt Colin Baker had over sent up Babe and the Butcher in Blake 7 and he wants to repay the favour, allegedly. I only knew there was an evil streak in you, old one indeed. Although I'll have to say, I think Babe and the Butcher is one of Colin's greatest over-egged performances.
Right. Let's give this a moment. Well, that's all the muck you can rake up. Sit down. Smugness does not become you, Doctor. That is an irrelevant observation. I think it's now my turn to present the case for the defence. In due course. Well, that's not fair. Look, I wish it put on record that my involvement in the affairs... See, again, this is the other problem with this, is that the actual story has no proper finish coda. It just moves to the trial. So if you were to watch this as a episode without the trial, its ending is very muted. I deny that. Without my help, an entire civilization might have been wiped out. Without your interference, it might have involved less sacrifice of human life. In a sense, Trial of the Time Lord might have been better if it did almost what this story is trying to do, and what the others try to do to a degree, and was more of a sort of deconstruction of Doctor Who and this notion of the Doctor's interference, which is, I know it's what it's doing, but it just does it in a very bland way. Thank you, Inquisitor. And if they wanted to do it, they'd have been better off doing it, Trial of the Time Lord, as a two-part story, which has the Valyard attack the Doctor for various clips from previous episodes, or, you know, taken three stories and used it as a way to repackage repeat content, which is what the show needed occasionally at times. No one would have thanked it for it now, but that would have made more sense than this format of interrupting fresh content with... Which is something you could do now as well. I mean, you probably maybe couldn't do it so well then because, I mean, you would have had a lot of years, but you don't have that kind of... You don't have the world that we live in with, like, streaming and viral content and stuff like that. It's maybe a little more difficult to do it then. It's something that you could achieve now, I think, doing it in that way. Because it's basically an evolved approach to Bad Wolf or The Silence or any of those things that have, you know, dotted through Doctor Who series in the 21st century, where you have, like, or Torchwood, something that you hang it on.
Well, so maybe the way I'd have liked to see them do this, which would have perhaps made it more meaningful, and it's easy again to say with retrospect, is to have pulled back from the borrow of the courtroom drama formula, which is, the shows did this, but have had the courtroom interspersed with the Doctor being sent on missions, which he would be tested and assessed and then brought back to the courtroom, and then he could play his case. Because in a sense, that would feel more of something that a powerful society could do, because it could control that. If it wanted to make sure that the Doctor wouldn't be able to escape, because they've made that very clear in the War Games, if they want to keep the Doctor under control, they can keep him under control. Yeah. So they bring him in, accuse him of these things, and then he can his defense is that I do good. And so they go, right, we have these temporal points which we're going to send you into. Maybe they're temporal points which can go either way or can be adjusted, and we'll see what you do, and we will assess you on your whether you are a problem or not. And then he could come back and fight, and they could send him out to he might have two or three. You could still do it as a series, but it would mean that you're not just constantly looking back. It's a synergized part of the show, and people would then care about the trial, and they would also care about what's going on. But yeah, again, like I said, it's easy to say with hindsight when you're not there in the moment trying to pull together a show with many pressures.
Yep. Yes, yes, yes. So that is Mysterious Planet, the first four parts of season 23, The Trial of a Time Lord. We are, for you, going to go through the rest of season 23 in a similar manner.
Oh, did we agree to that?
Yeah, we did agree to that. Yes, we did. So we are going to be proceeding with this in the coming weeks. So if you are enjoying this via, or if you're enjoying our commentary, I should say, via the Patreon, you get each commentary in one go. If you are on the Apple Podcast, Spotify, etc., listening that way, it's an episodic thing over several weeks, which may be interspersed with any relevant news that pops up in the meantime. So to get this in one go, head over to patreon.com/Casterbus. I feel
is that a bonus?
Well, I think it is a bonus, because I think our reflections and insights on this, I think are more entertaining than the serial itself.
Yeah, and if you find it entertaining to watch a middle-aged man slowly break down over 13 episodes, then do stay tuned, because I'm sure this is just going to get worse.
Yes, yeah. I was watching an episode of Would I Lie to You last night, and it was one of those ones with Bob Mortimer in, and it was like a compilation on YouTube, and Bob Mortimer had already done his work on David Mitchell, and then there's another thing that David Mitchell didn't know. I think it was like a guest person, and he'd lost all interest in caring about trying to get the right answer. He just wanted it to be over. So I think that's where James might be in 13 weeks time. We will see. Anyway, thank you very much for watching. Let us know what you think, and share this far and wide. Let people know. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.